Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us from South Florida, I believe.
South Florida, indeed. We're finally having a little bit of springtime here, I might mention. It's nice enough, really, to play golf and almost nice enough to go to the beach.
Southern British Columbia enjoyed record temperatures for St. Patrick's Day, warm and sunny on every beverage purveyor's patio. And normally St. Patrick's Day is like St. Patrick's Day in the old country, rainy and cold. But not this year.
Well, I think you'd have a good shot at that living up in the Pacific Northwest, but how do you like that? I guess it's more global warming then, huh?
Well, L.A. again got those killer rainstorms, and we mostly avoided those atmospheric rivers. L.A.'s weather has moved north. Ours has moved south.
Uh-huh. It's hard for Easterners to picture. When I think of L.A., I think of it raining smog, you know, but never water. And I go back to the film Chinatown, where it always seems like Southern California's star for water. So I can never quite picture L.A. in the rain.
Yeah, well, you know, they had better learn to capture that rain for the dry times. They just let it all slip away into the ocean. Have you ever heard of aquifers or dams? Apparently not.
Uh-huh. Well, the Romans did a good job with them, but California screwed up its chance.
Yeah. Yeah, those Roman aquifers still run 2,000 years later. They're still being used. Isn't that amazing?
I don't think they turn out engineers like the good old days.
Well,
I mean, they had it down.
I imagine in the Roman days, the engineers better get it right or you get your turn in the Colosseum.
Yeah, that was a problem. I guess that's true. We should subject the engineers to life or death terms.
Especially at Boeing. What about at Boeing? It's not the engineers, or maybe it is. By the way, a cousin of mine who lives in the Seattle area was one of the very last quality control managers that Boeing had before he retired in 1999. After that, they decided they would follow the Maytag model, which was each individual assembly line worker was assembly for their work, and their quality control showed that the washing machines and dryers, instead of being 90% good, were 95% good. But I don't think for aircraft 95% good is good enough.
Yeah, it's really the Boeing thing is really kind of scary, because people are sensing that the very complexity of things, especially when they start to integrate with microchips, has gotten to the point where we don't really have a handle on anything. And, we can't sort of engineer things so that everything works smoothly. This is true for cars in a way that's becoming increasingly problematical. You know, Tesla... It's one thing when the automakers had the internal combustion engine and all the parts, and they kind of were designed to work together, but the supply of chips and their functions come from outside of the industry itself. And that's not to say that Tesla doesn't work closely with chip engineers to figure it out, but the integration is too complex. So what you wind up with, in the case of my buddy, who has a white Tesla Plaid dual motor drive, and the seatbelt wouldn't retract. And because the seatbelt retraction mechanism is on it's regulated by a chip, which they could not get, they wound up giving him a whole new Tesla Plaid. And that doesn't even take into account the problem we're going to have when these cars reach the end of their life cycle, and nobody thinks it's worth it to buy a whole new battery pack for a Tesla Plaid or whatever. So the auto manufacturers have really not been comfortable with the fact that more and more of what a car does relies on microprocessors. But that's the way things are going. And you could sort of go into any area of the economy, even, let's say, computer software, and say the same thing, that we've reached a level of complexity in all things that no one really has a handle on it anymore.
Yeah, one of Boeing's problems is they contract out just about everything. It used to be all put together in Renton, Washington. Something like this number, I seem to recall, it may not be totally accurate, something like 200 subcontractors, and then they subcontract out. So you lose any sense of quality control. And when McDonnell Douglas, went in and took over Boeing, basically, Boeing moved their head office to Chicago, well away from where the aircraft is assembled, because they didn't want the executives mixing with those blue-collar workers and hear about any problems they had on the assembly line.
I'm not sure if laugh is the right word. Maybe you got to cry, but when they talk about all the miracles that AI is going to perform, it seems absurd, really, that there's so many things that we use, products, things that are engineered, even systems that are engineered, such as, let's say, a Costco or Safeway checkout system. And the problems that occur are so deeply dysfunctional that to take AI to kind of do a little tweaking here and there is ridiculous. It's like you're taking you're suggesting that you're going to tweak some of the nuances when the whole system is a bloody mess. So that's another problem. I always look at AI as spell check and autocorrect, and they are both so miserable. They're so pathetically useless that to sort of extrapolate miracles from some advanced evolution of AI is ridiculous. It's really just a lot of hubris.
Yeah.
Which of course hasn't stopped Nvidia from racking up valuation like no stock ever before in history.
There's also the cost of energy when it comes to AI. AI is just like farming Bitcoin, mining Bitcoin, where every calculation requires more and more computer capacity. AI is the same. One computer fires up another, fires up another, fires up another. No one has talked about where is all this power for AI going to come from. Apparently, British Columbia, which used to be awash in hydroelectric power, will have to start importing power next year.
Well, the really big players can find that computing power. Let's say Tesla in developing the quote unquote driverless car. It develops an algorithmic model that is really the sum of all of the inputs, all of the data inputs. And of course, we know just driving around that there's almost an infinite number of inputs that we are responding to when we drive. And the more of them that you can put into your driving algorithm, in theory, the better the car will drive itself. So you need vast amounts of data, more than the home computer user could even imagine, to complete a data set to make the driverless car reliable, which I don't think will ever happen. And only the really big players have the numbers crunching power to build these models. So I guess at this point they're looking for AI to tell them how to shorten the AI learning curve so that you don't need all the data in the world just to output a simple task.
Now, I heard from Wolf Richter in San Francisco where they've had the experiment with robot taxis. He says the good news is they don't run stop signs, which, okay, in a hilly city, that's probably a good thing. But the AI cars don't pull over for emergency vehicles. They run over fire hoses, and they don't recognize traffic being directed by a policeman. They think the policeman is just a regular pedestrian waving hi instead of, you better stop because you're about to go into a smoking crater.
You know, that was, all of it was, I think, nicely foreshadowed in the movie RoboCop. They build these huge, heavily armed robots to police what looks to be the city of Detroit, which is fallen siege to criminals. And so they're demonstrating the robot up in the boardroom, and the robot fails to pick up a command, and it trains these cannons, machine gun cannons, on an innocent board member, and they can't stop it. It just it blows them to bits. and the tinkers come out after that happens. The guns are still smoking, and they're trying to figure out, well, where do we start rewiring this thing?
Yeah. Now I can imagine maybe you can put some kind of a sensor or transmitter, you know, in a policeman's badge, so the robocar will recognize that's a special person. But right here, we apparently don't have the budget to give all the policemen cameras. So just a few of them are trotting around, and I wondered, yeah, they probably gave it to all the cops who have a good record. Are they going to give it to a policeman who has a record of abusing suspects? Probably not.
Well, that used to be what the CETA program did. You know, every law and order agency in the United States at that time, this would have been back in the early 70s, they developed SWAT teams, and they bought all kinds of armor and surveillance equipment, and it was really pretty cool. But I guess we'll have to bring CETA back to armor up.
Now, the stock market, is there any explanation about why it is continuing at a rampant pace? Is it just driven again by the Magnificent Seven, or has it shrunk down to the Mighty Two, or whatever we'd call them?
Well, there is an easy explanation. The market is mentally ill. It's what you're witnessing is a mass psychosis. And as far as the what's called the Magnificent Seven, I can barely even get that term out without having a gag response. I think it's shriveling in a technical sense. I'm looking at Microsoft is at a 430.58 target that I've been drumrolling since January. And it's a very clear target on the weekly chart. So I think Microsoft is at this very moment running its course. It's at a crucial resistance, and I doubt that it's going to exceed it. However, even if I allow for a Microsoft correction from here, the S&P chart is still, it's got a lot of headroom. It's got a lot of bullishness. So what I'm looking for is a pretty significant pullback from right around here, but at some point a resumption of the bull for a final leg up. And my target on S&Ps for that purpose is about, I think it's 6,200 or so. Let me just double check that. Well, here we go with the chart that doesn't even have the target on it. All right, but I see another 1,000 points with the S&Ps, but I think they're going to come down with, I don't call them the Magnificent Seven, I call them the Lunatic Sector. They're not even stocks that the portfolio managers think about. They simply buy them, they own them, they hold them, they never sell them. But at some point, they will be selling them just because their clients will want to redeem their shares for cash. So anyway, I think we're there. Really, we're at a really crucial spot, Apple has kind of been a leading indicator there. Apple is not even, it's nothing like the company that Microsoft is. Apple is just a big bloated company, unable to innovate, and I think they're going to get trashed in the coming recession because their overpriced hardware is going to be very vulnerable in a recession or worse that's impacted on a consumer side.
So just wait, if you want to get a brand new iPhone at a cheaper price, they'll have to sell just to maintain?
Well, people will not be replacing their iPhones every year and a half or 2 years. They're going to stretch the cycle. And I think Apple is extremely vulnerable. Microsoft, on the other hand, is not vulnerable even a little bit to the hardest of times, because over the years they've evolved into a subscription-based revenues company. So all of us with Windows operating systems, we no longer go online and after we've been goaded for a year or two to update Windows, it simply comes automatically on a subscription basis. So Microsoft 365, I think, has about 60 million subscribers. That's a pretty good chunk of change, paying $300 or $400 a piece, whatever it is. Actually, it's not that much, but to keep your software current with Outlook and the operating system, it's just an annual subscription that you pay. So Microsoft's revenues have become bomb-proof, and I'd have to concede that they've actually taken the steps that were required to make that subscription model work by upgrading their technical support. So I never thought it would happen, but you can call Microsoft and get a competent support person on the line if you have problems.
Now, the Fed, the Bank of England, and the Bank of Canada have all held their central lending rates. Are they going to be lowering them later this year?
For sure. But, you know, I do follow Tom Luongo pretty closely on that, gold, goats, and guns. And or guns go. I can never remember the order of those things, but he really thinks Powell is putting the screws to everybody. That Powell is truly he's a believer with respect to hard money, and he's working against not only the globalists who get their strength from their ability to create money out of thin air. You know, if you have loose money, then nebulous supranational organizations like Davos are able to get funding for whatever their projects are to dismantle capitalism and democracy around the world. So Powell is sort of the last, he's on the ramparts there, keeping money tight, and that really does put the screws to Europe. It makes the dollar more costly. It's been supportive of dollar strength, and it makes it harder for everybody else to loosen. And of course, Japan's getting in the game now itself with, a kind of a drum roll announcement. Hey, you know, we're done with the loose money, and so you might say that the Bank of Japan has sort of fallen in step with Powell, and between the two of them, they could probably lick the world that's after easy money.
Yeah, Japan, Bank of Japan's first rate hike in 17 years, they go from negative 0.1% to zero or perhaps 0.1%.
But that's all it takes to crush the carry trade. You know, everybody's thinking, everybody wants to borrow yen and make money putting it into something else. And that's been a big factor in supporting global financial inflation, but no more.
Now, the U.S. is pretty well the only major industrial nation not in recession. Canada technically stays out because we'll have 0.1% growth in a quarter, but we're seeing massive layoffs in some sectors. And I'm hearing, too, that this fall it's no longer going to be an employee can choose their job kind of market to employers will have the upper hand once again. What's the situation in the U.S.? Because they claim that unemployment there is 3% or something.
Yeah, yeah. You wonder what kind of jobs we're talking about here. As I understand it, all the hiring has been done for government jobs and healthcare. That's not exactly the productive area of the economy. But be that as it may, you know, when you get into the trillions for deficit spending, the U.S. it's had a difficult time sliding into the recession that's always going to be needed to clear the air. So the U.S. isn't in recession simply because we've had an enormity of fiscal stimulus that goes beyond anything that's either had been attempted or is even possible for our trading partners for countries outside the U.S.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what do you see happening with the price of crude?
It's taken off, really, with this whole business about Powell just waiting for the economy to confirm that inflation really is under control. Inflation is so totally about to rip that it's lunacy. It's idiotic. It's laughable to be talking about conditions changing to soften up Powell a little bit. So here, crude is, for whatever reason, pushing above 80, well above 80, like it wants really to go to 90 and higher. My current target on the, it'd be the May NYMEX contract is around $86 and change. So it's still got a few bucks to go to even reach a target, and it could get some movement above that as well. And when energy prices are rising, the price of virtually everything that's bought and sold on planet Earth rises. There's nothing that's outside of the influence of energy prices. So it will be felt as inflation in pretty much every area of every economy. So crude's taking a little breather today, down, it's just given up 55 cents at the moment, looking to May contract. And it's been as high as $83 a barrel. It's backed off to $80.73 currently. But looking at a bigger picture here, let me see if I can produce a good target in crude that'll. All right, I'm working with the always difficult TradeStation platform. All right, so I've got a target now up at $88 and change. So at that level, I don't know who's going to remain unspooked by the prospect of inflation, but it's going to be there in spades with a lot more in the pipeline. So yeah, crude is just going crazy.
Well, Paul Landry, former president of the BC Trucking Association, said to me once, Jim, virtually everything you own was in a truck at one time. Canadians are going to have the privilege and honor, according to the prime minister, of paying 3% more on the carbon tax April 1st. Canada accounts for less than 2% of the world's so-called greenhouse gases. We're the only country charging these exorbitant rates on fuel, including fuel to heat your home and to cook your food. As you said, when the price of energy goes up, whatever the reason, the price of everything goes up.
Yeah, and it's just like Canada, you know, to play good neighbor, benign policy on the carbon tax and everything else. It's like Canada pays its fair share, whereas the main polluters in this world, particularly China, pay nothing. So Canada is a generous offset, but it's not going to help much.
Well, if Canada stopped doing anything and reduced our carbon footprint to zero, it still wouldn't have any impact on a planet at less than 2%.
So we read,
And Canada has billions and billions of trees and absorbs so much of the world's carbon dioxide that really the government should be paying us a carbon bonus, not taking it away in taxes. Do you think they ever think of that?
That's true, but they don't. I think you're governed by miscreants, and it's just Canada's bad luck, I guess. So I don't know. I don't know if it's bad luck. I'm not a Canadian, so I can't appreciate the popular groundswell for the idiots that you guys elect. But of course, we elected our own idiots. They're a different variety of idiot. But Canada seems, at least to this American, it's you guys are wandering around in the woods.
Yeah, Canada already has the strictest rules, regulations, and laws concerning the extraction of petroleum products, oil, natural gas. And satellites I've seen from NASA, their sensors show that we're not the source of major methane leaks. It's China and Russia. Again, I fail to see how our carbon tax is going to deal with that when the biggest impacts on climate are Earth's orbit, solar activity, asteroid hits, and volcanic activity. The supervolcano at Yellowstone caused the biggest extinction in world history, wiped out 98% of life. And yet, somehow, Iceland's volcanoes right now erupting. Pinatubo, when it erupted several years ago, it wiped out in one day 10 years worth of carbon credits. How do carbon taxes control volcanoes?
Well, I guess they don't really, but that's not controlling the volcano is not the point of it. It's raising money, and of course, the question of who does that money go to? And wherever you stand on climate change, I don't think anybody's so crazy as to think that if we keep sending trillions of dollars to Brussels, that they're going to somehow engineer better weather. You know, whether you buy into the idea that global warming is caused by carbon dioxide that man creates, or you know, that it's solar cycles or something else, getting the weather under control is it's a project that's beyond the scope of money and earthly science.
Now, is gold going to continue on this big run?
Yes, it will. You know, the mask has finally been lifted here. There's no disguising by the usual scumballs who manipulate gold or the supply of gold, no cloaking the bull market. So it's sort of a scramble right now. And you'll see shakedowns like we're having in silver today to make it possible for these same dirt balls to acquire at relative bargain prices something that's screaming higher. But I've got a 2306 target right now for April gold. COMEX gold, currently trading, 2178. So we've got $128 to go in this phase of the rally. And of course, even here, we're at new all-time highs for gold. So it looks pretty darn good. Silver is well short of record highs. It's definitely lagged gold, and it'll be interesting to see how far out of whack the gold-silver ratio can get before silver starts playing catch-up. And the same thing could be said of gold mining stocks, which have so egregiously lagged the move in prices for physical gold. It's gotten, I mean, it's ridiculous. So, you know, GDXJ, the ETF that tracks exploration stocks, is doing a little catch up. I've got a $42.15 target for it, currently trading $36.80. So it's got, in percentage terms, a lot of room to move here, with an important resistance somewhere just a little bit above $38 a share. It's been as high as $37 today and 88 cents. So we may be near an impediment, but if it breaks through that, I think we're going to see a move to 42 and really the start of gold stocks finally getting somewhat in gear with the move that's taking place in precious metals prices.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
Well, you might want to avert your eyes, really, because what's going on, if you watch it too closely, you'll get crazy and think that because there are 100 good reasons why it should top here, that it should. You know, I'm just kind of watching a few charts, and I do think we're in the manic phase of a blow-off, but it's really hard to predict how high a blow-off can go. There's a technical indicator we use, stochastics, and because stochastic readings are characterized as being overbought or oversold, there are a lot of misconceptions about that indicator, that, well, you know, Microsoft stock is overbought here. Well, in purely technical terms, that doesn't mean that it's cruising for a fall. I don't know what the exact percentage is, but when you have a really big move in a stock, most of the move price-wise occurs when the stock is in the heavily overbought zone. So I'm going to say we're in the manic phase of a blow-off cycle, but it's happening so quickly, so precipitously, that you can't really you can't get in its way.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you for inviting me on, Jim. It is always a pleasure to talk with you and to connect with your audience.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.